Intentional Grounding is brought to you by CJ Wilson Mazda and the Zoom Zoom Nation. Let me tell you one thing about CJ Wilson Mazda. They are not your typical dealership. There are no suits, no high pressure sales, just regular people who treat you like a neighbor. And they have special monthly incentives all month long, which make it a great time to buy or trade. The other thing you should know is that the good people at CJ Wilson Mazda are always trying to make your car shopping fun. You can test drive a CJ Wilson Mazda in Orland Park, Countryside, and Lake Villa, and always online at ZoomZoomNation.com. Let's go.
Blue 20! Blue 20!
It's Intentional Grounding, Chicago's best Bears breakdown and analysis.
Ice up, son. Ice up.
Now, they are WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue and the Chicago Sun-Times Adam Johns.
Welcome in, episode 54 of Intentional Grounding. Of course, the Brian Urlacher episode.
Is this Urlacher with or without hair? Because I think there's a difference.
We got to go without hair.
Right, it's the football player.
Looking back at the football player.
Yes, not the talking head media member,
right?
But the football player.
Looks good with the hair, though. It's growing on me a little bit. It's growing on him, too, literally.
Quite literally. He looks about 5 years younger.
That's right. Welcome in. This is episode 54 of Intentional Grounding. Adam Hogue, Adam Johns, back with you. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. And we have a new Twitter handle to give you as well. The podcast is finally on Twitter at INT Grounding Pod. INT Grounding Pod. That work for you?
It works for me.
It was kind of
went
hard.
Over a lot.
It was fine. It was hard to find a handle that worked.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's more intentional grounding.
Yeah, that was a,
shows
there was a couple
or stuff out there. I didn't even
couple
know
taken.
About. So INT Grounding Pod. I think that's easy enough. Follow us on Twitter there as well. Please do, because that's where it's going to be easy to interact with us. A lot easier to interact with us there. We'll also tweet out our stories that we write, and so just be kind of a more easy central place for you to follow along with the podcast, and we appreciate you doing that as well. Of course, you can read us at WGNradio.com/Bears and ChicagoSunTimes.com, and find the podcast on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding. Saw some more reviews on there. Appreciate you doing that, rating the pod. It helps get the exposure on iTunes, which we're getting. So we thank you for that. All right. I also have a handy-dandy new soundboard here to play with. Unfortunately, more news to get to.
Yeah.
Seems like when we have news, it's bad news. And this is definitely bad news. Kevin White, not quite completely worst-case scenario, but about as close as you could get to it.
Oh, it's not good.
It's not good at all. As he heads the injured reserve for the second straight season to start his NFL career. Last year, he fractured his tibia, which is the weight-bearing bone in your leg. This time, he fractures his fibula, which is the non-weight-bearing bone. That's about the only good news out of this whole thing. But
well, the breaks are a bit different, too. He had a stress fracture in his tibia, which is more of a build-up to a break, I guess, to not talk like a doctor. I'm not a doctor like John Fox isn't a doctor.
We're going to talk to a doctor, though.
We will talk to a doctor.
Momentarily.
Yeah. And it's my understanding the current injury for Kevin White is a spiral fracture, which was involved in the high ankle sprain, the twisting of his leg. So we'll get more info from our doctor later.
Yeah, Dr. Neil Gadadra is going to join us momentarily. This is our go-to guy when there's major injuries to talk about. And we can dive in, and we will, with him on Jay Cutler as well and his thumb and maybe even, I don't know, what's going on with the rest of the entire roster.
Oh, that'd take the whole podcast up.
I mean, 30% of the roster is on the injury report
right now,
which is just crazy to think about. So let's talk about, we'll dive into the medical stuff in a second, but what this means for Kevin White. I mean, this is weird. I think a lot of people took this news yesterday and basically bailed on him. Okay, it's official. He's a bust. He's injury prone. He's never going to be good. I don't think that's right because we'll ask the doctor in a second what about the long-term impact of this. This is weird. He's hurt. He could be out for the year again. I'll tell you what, though. I feel better about his long-term prospects as an actual NFL player today than I did 2 weeks ago. Because 2 weeks ago, I didn't know if he could play. now he's shown us that he actually can play a little bit. Mm-hmm. He had a good game on Sunday, albeit against the Lions, but still it was a good step forward. And so from that standpoint, if he comes back 100%, I still think he could play in the NFL. So I think it's still way too early to call him a bust.
Right, right. But those feelings are completely understandable. This is a guy who, look, if he doesn't play again this year, he would have played four games in his first two seasons. I don't know what, if there's anybody, any first-round pick who's ever played less than that, especially a top 10 pick. That's not good. So, look, I understand those feelings of dismay and disappointment and wanting to give up on this guy, but the Bears aren't. To me, this does put his development back a little bit because, look, he's not going to develop because he's not playing, and that was the biggest thing he needed to do. He just needed to get more reps, more snaps, more looks, more passes thrown his way, and he was getting that over the past two games with Brian Hoyer as quarterback, and he was starting to look better, and now, look, he's not going to play for 8 weeks. That's just not good.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no question it's a blow, and it creates more questions, but I still don't think it's time to bail on this kid because we actually saw some potential from him, I think, the last couple of weeks. All right, so let's bring in the doctor here and try to figure out more about what's going on with Mr. Kevin White, Dr. Neil Gadadjar, our go-to guy when it comes to injuries. Doc, what's going on?
Hey, how are you guys?
Thanks,
Adam and Adam.
Good to talk to you, Doc.
Unfortunately, when we have to talk to you, it's usually bad news with the Bears, and we've certainly had conversations about Kevin White before. Last year, he has a stress fracture in his tibia. This year, he has a spiral fracture in his fibula, which was caused by a high ankle sprain. So let's start there, a severe high ankle sprain. Let's start there, and can you kind of explain us the difference in the two injuries and kind of really what's going on here with Kevin?
Sure. So, you know, when they talk about a stress fracture in the tibia is the main shin bone, right, in the leg. So a stress fracture happens typically when somebody does a lot of activities, whether it's running or jumping, whatever it may be, but you do a lot. Say that you haven't been training for a while and all of a sudden you do hardcore training, whether it's cross country or football, whatever, it can happen. Stress fractures are the beginnings of a fracture. It's like taking a chopstick and you're bending it, and there's a small crack. You know, if you just bend it some more, the whole thing's going to snap. So sometimes you leave it alone, see if it heals in a couple of months. If it doesn't, you got to put a rod down the leg just to make sure that it's never a problem. Now, that's the tibia. He had that tibia issue before, and because of that, you know, the leg is inherently going to be a little bit weaker. And remember, the tibia goes down into the ankle. It's part of your ankle bone, too. So what happened this time is he had an ankle sprain, and I'm not saying it's 100% related, but in general, when you've had a fracture in a previous bone, you've had previous, maybe, let's say, surgery in that same leg, that leg, and especially the ankle itself, is going to be inherently weaker than the other leg. And so what happened here is he had a high ankle sprain. High meaning it's higher up the leg than just what you typically think of as an ankle. But the problem with high ankle sprains is that not only can you fracture the bone, the fibula is a little bone on the outside of the leg. Not only can you fracture that, but the ligaments that go in between the tibia and the fibula, which is really important to keep the two together, that gets torn as well because it's a high force injury. So what ends up happening is that the fracture itself on these looks like a spiral up the fibula because it's kind of a torsion, like a torque that happens on the ankle. So it's a pretty bad injury in and of itself, but either way, it's still a fracture. So whether it's a fracture that you need to fix or it's a fracture that can heal on its own, you're still looking at 6 to 8 weeks to let it heal. And that's the big issue with this. Now, when he comes back, will he be fine? Yeah, he'll get his motion. He'll start working on his strength. But what you guys have to realize is that for the first 1 to 2 years after you've had ankle injuries and maybe even a surgery for it, you get swelling randomly. You can occasionally get pain on the outside of the ankle. And you really have trouble with something we call proprioception. That's kind of where your ankle knows where it is. Okay, so it's important for a receiver, a runner, somebody that's making cuts. I think in the end of the day, he'll be fine. But just every now and then, it could become a little bit of an issue. And hopefully he can just fight through it as we go through the future. But that's something to look out for when you have ankle injuries and ankle fractures. It could heal, but you still get some residual effects of it down the road. And it may not be a big deal. Cold weather, it could be bothersome. Occasional swelling after a game. But the big key is how hard he goes after rehab and how well he does in his rehab. That's the biggest key to the whole thing.
Neil, the Bears said they were considering surgery for the, I guess, for the spiral fracture. What would that be different than surgery for the stress fracture? Are we still talking about a rod here? What's the difference here? And why would they be going towards that option if it could heal on its own over time?
Right. Good question. So the rod, obviously, that's for the stress fracture for the big bone. It stays inside the bone forever, and that way it acts like an internal strut, right? So you never have to worry about stress fractures because you've got, quote unquote, like almost an extra bone in there just supporting it. The little bone, the fibula, it's tiny. And because it's small, our typical way we fix is we put a plate and screws on there. Okay. Now, the question is, all right, when do you know when to fix it? When do you know when to leave it alone? Well, it comes down to how much it's displaced, meaning how big the break is and how much has it moved. If it's closely aligned, let it heal. It's not a problem. You can put a cast on, you know, and then let it heal. Then you do physical therapy to get the motion back. Whole process takes a couple of months. Sometimes in our athletes, we tend to operate quickly and put plates and screws in because at least you know that the bone is back to anatomic alignment. And it can get you, sometimes it can speed you up a little bit in the process. But overall, for this type of injury, you're still looking at 6 to 8 weeks no matter what, which direction you go, conservative or surgical. So really it comes down to how displaced and separated the bony fragments are. And it's a spiral fracture, so lots of times those need to get fixed.
We're talking to Dr. Neil Goododger, a sports orthopedic surgeon based out of Beverly Hills, who previously worked with the Bulls and the Chicago White Sox. He's our go-to guy here on intentional grounding when we have injuries to talk about. So with this timeline, 6 to 8 weeks kind of to heal, there's always rehab involved too and making sure the leg is strengthened up. He has to be out 8 weeks anyway, that now that he's been put on injured reserve. The earliest Kevin White could return is week 13 in what sounds like the best case scenario. Obviously, you're not his doctor, but in your opinion, how likely is it that Kevin White could actually return later on this season?
Well, I think he could definitely return. The question is not whether he returns. The question is how well he returns, right? It takes 6 to 8 weeks to let it heal, to start, you know, to really get into rehab, get your motion going. But the problem with the ankle is strengthening it and getting I called proprioception. Getting that back takes a little bit of time. And especially for what he does, it's going to make it difficult to come back at 100%. So I'm not questioning whether he'll come back. I do think he'll come back. I'm just questioning the effectiveness, you know, for such a high-end player. The question is going to be, you know, can he come back to his form, or is he still going to take time to kind of get back to where he needs to go? So I think the first week or two he's back will be a little bit telling. I mean, you'll see how well he's moving. But it's not impossible for him to come back. The question would be if he's ready by week 16, does it make sense to put him in for a game if they're not going to playoffs? Right. Or, you know, it just depends on where they are at that time, I think.
I want to go back to the lingering effects, the maintenance. I think that's the word that popped in my head, the maintenance this is going to involve for Kevin White, not only after the rehab and after this injury heals, but down the road. You mentioned the random swelling and things to deal with. How is this going to be? Is he going to have to do that a lot? I mean, what are we looking at here in terms of, I guess, the maintenance and the things that could pop up? Because these are two major injuries to his leg. I just remember the atrophy, the muscle atrophy that he had after the first surgery. I mean, his left leg was considerably smaller than his right leg. I mean, what are we looking at here?
Well, this one shouldn't be as bad as the tibia one. It's a smaller bone. But you're right. The maintenance is the key. And it really comes down to how well, you know, the training staff does, how well he does in rehab, and how much he focuses on that ankle. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So some things you can't avoid. I mean, when you have hardware in your ankle, when it's cold outside, you get the Chicago cold winters, he's going to feel it. Now, whether he feels it during a game, that's another thing, but he's going to feel it. It's going to bother him a little bit. He'll get occasional swelling. You know, so the question will be, how much does that bother him? So in terms of maintenance, it behooves him to really stay on top of this and work that leg out. Like you said, if you had a previous injury and the leg is smaller, you're setting yourself up for a further injury, right? So it's really important that he and the staff and the trainers and his therapist all get him where he needs to go. So if and when he comes back at the end of the year, the key will be how well he did his rehab and how much strength he got back, right? Because last thing you want to do is put him back out there when the bone's healed, but yet he still has weakness in that ankle, because you're setting him up to have that happen again. And this happened from a sprain. And we all get sprains, you know, but you can see like it with football players and injuries in a previous leg, it could set you up to have these higher end injuries, which will cause these kind of issues and put you on, you know, the IR list.
Let's hit up on a couple other injuries the Bears are dealing with, which actually we could talk for probably about 4 hours, considering that they have 30% of their roster on the injury report right now.
Right.
But let's focus on Jay Cutler and Danny Trevathan. Danny Trevathan, a linebacker. Cutler, obviously a quarterback, playing two different positions. Both came out of their Week 2 game against the Philadelphia Eagles with thumb injuries, ligament damage in and around their thumb. Now, Trevathan opts for surgery. He can club that hand up and play on it, obviously, with a quarterback, and it is Cutler's gripping hand. He needs to be able to grip a football. So what is Cutler kind of dealing with right now, considering, Adam, we talk, there's torn ligaments in there, right? That's what.
Well, he's got a sprained thumb, so yes, okay. There's damaged ligaments. To what severity, extent, it's unknown. I mean, now, Trevathan obviously had, his ligaments were completely torn because he opted for surgery, right. But I don't think Jay Cutler's were as severe as Danny Trevathan.
So what are we dealing with here, Doc, with Cutler and his, first of all, the decision not to have surgery and how quickly he can realistically come back from this? He's obviously already missed two games.
Right. So, you know, there's a difference, right? You can, when you sprain your thumb ligaments versus when you tear them. And that's the big question between Trevathan and Cutler, the big difference. You know, the main ligament in the thumb that we deal with a lot of our sports athletes and injuries through falls or, you know, gripping a football and somebody hitting your thumb and it kind of swings outward. Well, those inner ligaments between your thumb and your first finger, sometimes they can tear. And if that tears, what ends up happening is your thumb, it actually will swing out more than it can now. So even if you guys take your thumbs right now and just move them out, you know, like almost like you're hitchhiking, you know, it'll stop at a certain level. But when somebody has a tear or of that ligament's there to hold that thumb. So if that thing is torn, it's like losing the check reins on a horse. You know, it's going to keep going, and it'll open up a lot. So what ends up happening is you can't get a good grip. You don't feel stable in the thumb. And that's, I mean, that's terrible for a quarterback, obviously, right. You know. So the question for him is, all right, well, is it a tear or is it a sprain? Well, I think more reports are leaning towards a sprain. If that's the case, it's mainly a question of rehab. Gripping the ball is going to be painful for him. And that's what's stopping us. So you could have different level sprains, but at the end of the day, it's how quickly does, you know, can he rehab? How good does it feel? And then can he grip the ball? It just happens to be that he's a quarterback. That's the worst position to be to have even a thumb sprain. It can keep you out 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks if it's severe enough. So typically you're looking at probably 2 to 3 weeks is how most guys are out. And the quarterback level, you maybe add a week here and there. But with Trevathan, when you have a tear, you know, it's important to fix it if you can. And with his position, he can get away with it. If Jay had a tear, well, then, you know, I think given that he's a quarterback, they would have opted to fix it. And if they fixed it, then you would have seen him, you know, been out. He would have been out for several months. And he'd have to go through extensive rehab. And I don't know if we'd have seen him back this year. So the fact that, you know, they're calling it a sprain makes me think and leads me to believe, and again, I'm not his doctor, but it leads me to believe that you should see him back within a 3 to 4 week time frame of the date of injury. And it'll be important to see how he is on his first game back, because, that, again, that'll be very telling. How many deep balls is he throwing? What's his velocity? Does he feel comfortable in his throws? And you'll notice these things. Is his thumb still wrapped? And if it's still wrapped, you know, it might still bother him a little bit, but he's toughing it out because he's known to be a tough guy anyway when it comes to injuries. So Trevathan, linebacker, tear, it makes sense. Fix it. Wrap him back up, send him back out there. But the problem is with the quarterback, whether you have a sprain or a tear, it's just the position, the holding of the ball, throwing the ball. It's just, it's difficult. And that's actually the major difference between the two, to be honest. You know, it's their positions.
How easy is it for, well, let's go back to Cutler, because you look at Trevathan, he's got this special brace they designed for it. So it seems like he's secure. He looked pretty aggressive in individual drills. He was using his hand, forcefully using his hand. But Cutler, how easy is this to, say he comes back in a week or two, gets sacked, falls on it, maybe hits his hand off somebody's helmet while he's throwing. Is this pretty easy to re-aggravate the sprained thumb?
Also, we should probably mention, this is the same thumb he injured in 2011 that he had surgically repaired.
That was a break, though.
That was a broken thumb?
That was a broken
okay.
thumb.
All right. Does but again, that, e- yeah, even could still, that have any impact
you
know, here?
Again, same thing again. When you've had a previous injury in a body part, it's really never 100% again, you know? And so it's not, you know, obviously it's throwing arm, and it may not be related. But, again, we're looking at another situation in a player where they've had an injury before in a certain region, and look, something else popped back up. In terms of it happening again, it's easy, unfortunately, in the first few weeks. You know, given the position, the throwing, he sets himself up for that anyway. It's like saying, hey, look at a receiver. Is it easy for them to have ankle sprains? Yeah, it is. And it's just the way you play and what you're doing. If you've had a previous injury, again, just like the ankle, like we talked about before, it takes time for you to get your strength and to get your motion and just to, for you to be 100%. What'll happen is Jay will go back out there. He's probably not going to be 100%. You know, he'll be good enough to play and he won't feel pain hopefully as much, and then he'll go out and play. But yes, it does set him up for additional injury. The hope is that obviously that doesn't happen. They'll probably protect it with some wrap or tape as long as he's comfortable throwing, and hope that that's enough, and hope that he doesn't get into a situation where he hits a helmet, falls on the that thumb outstretched, you know, whatever the case may be. But that'll be kind of the big issue. But I think you'll see him back. I don't know if he'll be, quote unquote, 100%. But hopefully the pain level won't be such that, you know, he can get back out there and make all his throws and does what he needs to do. But he'll likely be wearing some sort of tape type, you know, or a brace or something on his thumb, whatever's comfortable. And he will be susceptible for it to happen again. So it's just, you know, it's one of those things you got to cross your fingers and just hope that it doesn't happen again.
Well, and the good news is Brian Hoyer is playing pretty well in his absence, so the Bears can be patient with Jay Cutler right now. Dr. Neil Gadadjar, we always appreciate the time. So informative, and, you know, you somehow, I think, make Bears fans make, you know, bad situations sound better, and that's a good thing.
At least the Cubbies are doing well, right?
That's right. That's yes. Right.
And they're the saving grace in the city right now.
Yeah, we'll see.
And, that's right.
And Kyle Schwarber's rehabbing just fine. Should be back for spring training.
Awesome. Good to hear.
All right. Thanks, Doc. We always appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Adam and Adam.
All right. So that's Dr. Neil Gadadjar. Love talking to him. He just has a good way of explaining things, like the reins on a horse. It's a good analogy.
Yes. Oh, perfect.
Right?
Yes.
Right. No, so that all makes sense. I mean, when you think about and I talked to him. I was exchanging some texts with him yesterday, and it's funny. I mean, different doctors have different opinions. I mean, you listen to Dr. Neil, and he sounds like good chance Kevin White should be able to return this year. But there's a difference between that and whether or not it makes sense for the Bears to bring him back off of IR. Remember, they can only bring one player back. That's a factor. But also, remember, this is starting to sound like last year already. Okay, could they have probably brought Kevin White back last year and got him a few reps in week 15, 16,
probably.
17? Probably. But they're thinking about the long-term future, and their season was basically over at that point. So what is the situation going to be like in December again? Now, the difference is I think this year, if he rehabs quickly and he's ready to go week 13, sounds a little optimistic there. That's five games, though. He could still salvage nine games of his sophomore NFL season. That's worth doing, in my opinion, if he's healthy. But you heard the concerns there about long-term impact. You don't want to rush it. And that's what they're going to be weighing a couple months from now.
You know, I was talking to I got a buddy who's a trainer who has worked with a few of the professional teams in the area. And he called it a season decision. And I asked for clarification. And he's like, it really depends on where the team is at later in the year. Because that spiral fracture, like Dr. Neil said, could heal. The high ankle sprain, those damaged ligaments, can heal in this time frame. It's the 6 to 8 week time frame. But where are they at in the season? Are they completely out of it again? And if they are, why would you risk more long-term damage or risk long-term concerns with your first-round pick? So, yes, it is very similar to last year in that regard. And, I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, this is a guy they still firmly believe in. I know some fans, like we talked about, are giving up on him, but the Bears aren't, and they're going to keep his long-term hopes in mind here.
Yeah, and that's really a smart thing here to do. But I still think the guy needs as many reps as he can get. So we'll see what this thing looks like in a couple months, but a big blow in the short term for the Bears, who now need a new number two wide receiver. And let's go ahead and take a question from a listener on this, because that basically was his question. This coming from @302FedFan on Twitter, @INTGroundingPod. So you can submit questions on our new Twitter handle at INT Grounding Pod. And the question is very simple to us. Who will be the new number two wide receiver? I think it's obviously Eddie Royal.
I think Eddie Royal is already the number two.
That's probably fair, the way he's been producing so far this season. So maybe let's tweak this question a little bit. Who is filling in for Kevin White?
Cam Meredith. I think he is... Well, he's the early favorite because he played more last week. But he's also physically... Look, he's not physically... He's not as athletically gifted as Kevin White. I mean, he wasn't drafted. He's an undrafted guy who is impressed in some regard. But he's built
part of that,
physically
though,
the same.
Was because he's coming from an FCS school in Illinois State where he played quarterback.
Yes.
He wasn't tearing it up in the Big 12 wide receiver at West Virginia, and that stuff matters. So I'm bringing that angle in.
He emerged late in his college career.
To show that there's actually potential here that this guy can actually be a real player.
Yes, and he is 6'3", 210 pounds, with long arms. He's kind of smooth in his route running. He may be a little bit more polished, actually, than Kevin White in that regard. Great locker room guy, bright kid. So he would seem to be the leading candidate to at least get some of those, you know, those 5 to 8 targets that Kevin White seems to get every single game.
An interesting side note, Cam's made some nice catches the last couple weeks, some tough catches. There was one against the Lions the other day. I talked to both him and Brian Hoyer on the side. They both admitted that pass, and if you remember the play, it's a rollout to the right by Brian Hoyer, and Cam and Alshon were running, mirroring their routes at different depths. So Cam was underneath, Alshon was deeper. Hoyer said he was actually trying to hit Alshon on that play, and Cam just, I mean, he's got long arms, he's got a crazy catch radius, which is something John Fox said the other day, and he saw it was in his radius and he snatched it out of the air.
So he got a first down.
I talked to him and he goes, well, thank God it was at least a first down, because otherwise if you intercept a pass to Alshon and you don't get the first, not going
right,
to be
right.
Happy with you.
He's a nice local story, too. Yeah. Illinois State, St. Joseph's. I mean, he was part of a St. Joseph's team that was kind of on the rise. St. Joseph's used to get beaten up pretty bad in the SEC. He helped buck that trend a bit because he's a very talented football player. So he's a good player to root for.
All right, running a little bit behind here, so let's get into our preview of Sunday's game. Bears at Indianapolis Colts. The Colts, surprisingly to me, are 4.5-point favorite, considering how they're playing. This is a noon game Sunday on Fox. Fox put their A-team on this. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews are calling this one between 2-1-3 football
teams. Brian Hoyer show. Come on.
Oh, all right. That's fine. Just thought that was a little weird. All right, let's get to our two big questions. You want to start?
Sure. Look, Brian Hoyer deserves a lot of credit for what he did last week, but to me it helped to have a strong defensive performance and helped to have a great performance by your offensive line. Can those two areas, the offensive line and defense, do what they do well to help boost Brian Hoyer's performance again?
Mine's related to what you just said, but I'm going to put it more on Brian Hoyer. Can he keep this up? And yes, it's going to take the things you just mentioned, but this guy has been through these waves throughout his career. He shows up, he plays well, then he has a down week or a down couple weeks or an awful playoff performance against the Chiefs in the playoffs last year. There's a reason why he's been a career backup and gone from place to place, 6 different NFL teams. And teams have moved on from him even after he got the chance to start for a long time. The Browns and the Texans, it happened. So the question is, can Brian Hoyer keep this up? And I think that's a huge question Sunday against the Colts. Your second question.
Can we get a positive from the special teams? Look, yeah. I looked back at that punt return TD the Lions had, and there was an awful block in the back on Chris Brzezinski. I don't know how it wasn't called. It was
I saw
egregious.
It. Yeah, you were right.
And
but two guys immediately missed a tackle.
Right,
Sam Acho missed one, and Logan Paulson,
which is just as bad.
They should have had him.
Exactly. Right?
Like should pretty much within 3 yards of where that block in the back happened.
Yes,
he still should.
And I get it, when someone gets pushed in the back, some things start going awry. Guys lose their angles. Guys lose their footing. But whatever. Connor Barth needs to be more consistent. I think it will help not to be at Soldier Field. I don't know what's going on there, but he's missed 2 field goals there. You don't want more penalties on special teams like we got from DeAndre Houston Carson. So I would like to see special teams be a spark in some regard, like it was kind of earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think that's huge because really they did not put together a full three-phase game against the Lions. Their third phase was terrible on Sunday, so that needs to be fixed. My question is actually, how do the Indianapolis Colts respond? I think that's, I mean, really a huge factor in this game. This is a team that's really been through a lot of turmoil over the last calendar year.
That turmoil's still going on.
And that's my point. I mean, you got Andrew Luck really showing some emotion. That locker room doesn't seem like it's in a good place right now.
No.
And you're coming off a game in London. They fire Antonio Cromartie the other day. They fire C.O. Moore the other day. And I put it that way because that's really what they are. They released those players, waived Moore technically. But they released two starters. It seems like you go to London, someone gets fired, right? Usually it's a head coach on the plane ride back, but this time it's players that they just released two starters. Moore is a guy who's supposed to step up in the absence of Jarrell Freeman, who's now on the Bears. There's a lot of questions here. You're coming off a long flight home from London. You got to deal with that this week. I don't think that's as big of a deal as people have made it out to be, but it is a factor. So how do the Colts respond in this game? These seem to be two teams kind of going in the opposite directions in the last week.
Andrew Luck is getting pummeled again. This is a guy who is supposed to be special. I'm not seeing special right now. Are you seeing that this franchise?
Those offensive lines suck.
Exactly. Is Frank Gore really the answer at running back? T.Y. Hilton's an okay receiver. I mean, is he an elite receiver? You know, Kobe Fleener's gone. So, look, I don't know what they're doing around Andrew Luck. This is a guy who is supposed to be this special talent, and I still think he is. That's why he was the first overall pick a few years ago. But he's been hit, sacked 15 times, a league high 15 times through four games. That's not good. That's a recipe for firings. Chuck Pagano, their GM who can't get along with him. It's just, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, it's a mess, and I think it opens up a good opportunity.
Ryan Grigson, sorry. That's
yeah, Grigson. For, you know, I think it opens up an opportunity for the Bears to potentially get another win this week. All right, let's move on.
Bold predictions.
I'll start here. Eddie Royal, 7 catches, 111 yards last week against the Lions. I predict he goes over 100 yards again, but gets two touchdowns in this game. So 100 yards receiving and two touchdowns for Eddie Royal, who is just going to get more. He's going to get featured more than he already has, which has been a lot.
Here's a bold prediction. The Colts protect Andrew Luck well.
Oh, God.
You know why? Because the Bears' pass rush is... Look, I know Vic Fangio doesn't like the blitz. He doesn't get exotic. He sends four rushers. The big nuance with him is who's coming, right? But you know what? The guys he has coming right now just aren't producing. They're not getting to quarterbacks. So I think Andrew Luck maybe gets sacked once this entire game, and that's not good for the Bears.
No, that's not good. And I think that it would have a big outcome in which way this game goes. So
predictions.
You picking the Colts?
Colts 24-20. Now, I say this, I am 0-3-1 against the spread. I am 1-3 overall this year. The Bears, look, this is a winnable football game for the Chicago Bears. The Colts are not a good team. Yes, Andrew Luck is a darn good quarterback, but elsewhere there are holes all over that Colts roster. This is a very beatable football team. They can do it, but you still got Brian Hoyer quarterback. You still got an array of injuries all over the field for the Bears. Even if these guys do play, your Tracy Porters, your Leonard Floyds, they're still banged up a bit. You're not getting them the way you want to get them. So, look, 24-20 Colts, I don't say that confidently, though.
Well, one of us is going to be wrong here because I'm picking the Bears 24-23, just barely eking this one out. I like how the defense played last week, and I'm, I guess, a little bit more optimistic about their chances to create some pressure on Andrew Luck with that offensive line. I just don't think that's very good. And so if the Bears' defense plays anywhere near the way they did last week, and they didn't allow a touchdown, and the special teams plays better, I think the Bears' offense, there's no reason to think that they can't keep going. I mean, Kevin White's a loss, but I don't think he was like a major part of their game plan every week that they are not going to be able to stomach that. The way Eddie Royal's playing, I agree with Ryan Pace when he says that there's some depth here. That was something he told us back when we talked to him in New England. And I don't know if we looked at him a little sideways that that was a position where he liked his depth, but you know, there's guys here that sort of know what they're doing. Even Deontay Thompson can come in and
make a catch.
You know, run the right route.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think they're going to try to get Cam Meredith involved because he is a little bit more upside here, and he's been out there. I think the Bears win this game.
Here's the thing that nobody's talking about from the Lions game. They could have potentially really, I don't want to say blow them out, but there are offensive penalties. You know the blunder on fourth down. And then there was this situation against the Lions where the defense just seemed to want to allow the Lions to stay in the field, you know, with certain third down penalties, whether it's really young offsides or whatnot. So I get it, but look, I need to see more. You still got a rookie running back. You still got your backup quarterback in there. You just lost, yes, one of your starting wide receivers. You got injuries all over the field. I need to see more to be convinced. And yes, I'm not completely sold on the Colts in my prediction. I think the Bears can win this game, but I need to see more out of the Bears consistently.
Well, here's the key to the game, as we know.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
They do that, and they're going to win.
They did. You know what? They stayed hard that entire Lions game. I mean, let's be honest. They were hard that entire Lions game.
That's an interesting way to put it.
They were hard.
All right. We'll get to our rest of our NFL picks here and our college picks as well. But first, time for our favorite segment. What does the Fox say?
Just don't flop it out there and expect to perform like that. What the fuck,
babe? That's an oldie and goodie there.
There it is. I've been teasing that for a few weeks. The story behind that is actually when I tweeted out the Harold Jones Quarte line.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
One of our friends on Twitter... It's been a couple weeks, so I apologize for not having the handle in front of me. I'm sure he's listening. But one of our friends on Twitter pointed out, hey, you got to look up this thing that they play in Denver every day.
And they still play it.
They play it every morning at like 7:30 on Denver, I don't know, the Fan or whatever it is. I apologize for not knowing the name. It's as part of their montage for the segment they do. And it is from a line that Fox said back when he was the head coach, which was...
Just don't flop it out there and expect to perform like that.
This podcast just went from PG-13 to R, Adam.
No. We got the clean lyrics marker on iTunes. It says it's clean. We're a little risque.
Okay.
We're still PG.
I like that.
I don't even think we're PG-13.
No?
No, these are just...
We have to start swearing more.
I don't know where your mind is in the gutter. These are just things that John Fox and Harold Jones Quarte say.
I'm a sports writer. When you walk into that media room, our mind immediately hits the gutter. We're all juvenile delinquents in there.
Permanently in the gutter. All right, let's move on to our picks as we keep this thing hopefully on the air.
I have a new approach to this. I've been so god-awful in my picks.
That's an understatement.
Yes. So all you're going to do is just say them. And whatever pops in my head, that's what I'm going with.
We were both horrendous last week when it came to the NFL. I was 1-5.
Who'd you win? Who'd you get?
I had the Jaguars over the Colts.
Okay.
You went with the Colts, which makes you 0-6.
Yes. So,
because we did not differ. That was the only game we differed on, and we were just wrong. All the way, we both got our locks wrong. You went with the Panthers. They lose to the Falcons. I went with the Cardinals. I don't know what the hell's wrong with that team. I mean, that was
the Cardinals and the Panthers. They're both 1-3.
I had them in the Super Bowl beating the Vikings in the NFC Championship game. That's looking. I wish I had gone with the Vikings now at this point. So both wrong on our locks. For the second week in a row, we forgot to make upset picks. So I don't even know what the hell we're doing here. It's just a mess.
I clearly don't know what I'm doing. I went 0-6.
The good news is we were good on college picks again. I went 4-0. You went 3-1. So.
We're covering the wrong level.
Maybe just hit, maybe just hit fast forward here. Go straight to our college picks. We will start, though, with our NFL picks right here. Okay. Starting in the NFC North, the Philadelphia Eagles head to Detroit. The Eagles, what a story they are right now at this point. 4-0. Carson Wentz tearing it up. The Lions lose to the Bears last week. And somehow the Lions are only a 3-point underdog here. Weren't the Bears a three-point favorite?
No, 3-point dog.
To the Eagles?
I thought no, to the Lions they were.
Yeah, to the Lions. To the Eagles they were a 3-point favorite. Given what we've seen the last few weeks, it seems like the Eagles should be favored more in this game than they are. Lions, a 3-point dog, home dog. This is a noon game Sunday on Fox.
Eagles. whatever pops in my head now. I'm not even going to give it much thought. I did much more research on the college games this week. I need to find some type of mojo, so it's the first team that pops in my head. So it's Eagles.
Okay.
What are you going with?
I am going to also pick the Eagles here. I just don't know how you can go with the Lions at this point. We do have to interrupt our picks here for a quick second. Because there is some breaking news coming in. It involves a kicker. According to Mike Garofolo from the NFL Network,
good guy.
The Cowboys will work out free agent kickers Robbie Gould and Kai Forbath.
Good for Robbie.
Forbath? Is
Forbath. Kai Forbath.
Dan Bailey has a back injury, isn't feeling great. Now, Robbie Gould has been waiting for a winning team, from what I understand.
Yes.
I think he's actually had offers.
Yes.
I don't know what happened. There was some interesting conflicting reports with the Browns a couple weeks ago.
Money was an issue or something like that.
I'm not sure Robbie wanted to sign there anyway.
Yeah,
though.
He has the connections there with the special teams coordinator, right?
The thing about the Cowboys, there's a winning team for you to, you know, contending team for you to be on. But if Dan Bailey's back injury is not major,
you could be in and
out
of there. Yeah.
They're going to bring Bailey back. That guy's automatic. So,
well, it's a big decision for Robbie.
Interesting. All right. I think he should be waiting for the Vikings to give up on Blair Walsh.
Oh yeah,
that'd be a great situation.
He's only missed 3 field goals though. Did I read that right? People are panicking.
But 3 and 4 weeks. This is the NFL.
I know.
Robbie basically just missed 3 all last year.
Was it Mason Crosby? Was it 2 years ago where he was missing like 1 every week?
Yeah.
And they stuck with him?
And he got it back. Yes. Well, it's like golf. I mean, I hear those comparisons all the time from coaches and kickers. And it's a good analogy because sometimes you just lose it. And then you have to fight back and you change your swing and all of a sudden you're back. Some guys never get back.
Yeah. Some guys never had it, like my golf game.
That's like me, too. All right, moving on. We both have the Eagles. All right, Texans at Vikings. Interesting, fun game. Houston Texans, two good teams here. Minnesota's, I mean, they look good. Still undefeated. 6.5-point favorite at home here. So do the Vikings just get to play at home all year?
Got the brand-new billion-dollar beautiful stadium. Why not?
You just get 16 home games this year.
Yes, for that beautiful facility you have.
This one's not on primetime TV, but it is a noon game on CBS. Texans, Vikings, what do you got?
Vikings.
Just that simple?
Yep. Again, not offering much analysis here, folks. Just popping, or whatever team pops in my head when I look at it, that's who I'm going with.
All right. I'm going to go Vikings, too. I don't like that I'm agreeing with you again, because you're going to be wrong. Maybe my strategy should just be to go opposite of you and not really think about it too much. I just think the Vikings are...
Sam Bradford is good. Now, here I am offering analysis, but I think Sam Bradford is in such a perfect situation for his career revival.
I can't remember if I said this. By the way, Sam Bradford's not good.
He's good.
No, he's not.
He's good.
This team, did I say this on the podcast already? I know I tweeted this the other day, but this team's reminding me of the 06 Bears. They have a great defense, like a lights-out defense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they have an unspectacular offense, but one that's efficient enough to get enough points to win these games.
Bradford's making throws that Rex Grossman could only dream about.
Well, that's Grossman actually had a decent arm. He just...
He had the smallest hands.
Dumb. He had small hands. And he was
Bradford,
short.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, so let me finish. That's the one area where I do think if there is a difference between the two teams, they have a better quarterback than the Bears did that year.
Better receivers?
Diggs is better than anything the Bears had.
Better tight end?
See, that was before the Bears had Olsen. So, they were running Des Clark out there. Did they have anyone else? I'm trying to think.
I forget. That was 10 years ago.
I know. And we didn't cover that team. We were just watching them. So, I see a lot of similarities there. And I think the question is that quarterback that much better than Grossman to get them over the hump that Bears team couldn't get over?
I am nodding emphatically.
You think they're a Super Bowl winner?
They're a Super Bowl contender.
All right. The curse of Adam Johns. The Vikings will now lose out. All right, let's move on. We both had the Vikings there. Giants at Packers. Packers are 7.5-point favorite at home. This is the Sunday night game, 7:30 on NBC. Before you make your pick, did you see Mike Florio like bitching on Twitter yesterday about how the Giants have to... Last week they played... Okay, they played Monday night in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. They have to go home. They have to come back for a Sunday night game in Green Bay.
Okay.
On a short week. Back-to-back road games. And he was like saying that was unfair. It's not like they're flying cross-country. It's a two-hour flight.
Right.
New York's not that far.
No. I don't get it.
Teams have to play back-to-back road games all the time.
Right.
And it would be worse if they had a noon game.
I think
the fact that they play at 7:30 actually helps them.
What was it? The Mark Trestman era. They went from coast to coast primetime games. Didn't they not? San Francisco. And then to New York, back weeks.
Yeah.
And they won them both.
Right, so that's worse.
Yeah.
And that was, I guess that was Sunday night, Monday night, though. So they had the extra day. Florio's bitching because they went Monday to Sunday, so it's a short week.
I get it.
That flight is not long, though.
Yeah.
I was a math major. I wasn't, actually, but.
Who do you have in the game?
First of all, can I just say, what the heck is going on with Odell Beckham Jr.?
I don't know, but I love it because I won my fantasy game the other day because he sucked.
Yeah, he's on my team. And I don't know. Packers. I think the Packers are in a blowout. I think the Giants are – that Beckham situation is hot, man. I don't know what is going on with him, but when your star player just can't get it together and he's releasing his anger in a way that seems to be a detriment to his team, he's not producing. Look – you're going to get the best matchup every single game. You're going to get the team's best cornerback.
That's how it goes when you're number one.
Yes. You got to be the number one receiver and beat that guy.
And Victor Cruz is getting the targets right now.
Yes. So I think the Giants are a bit of a mess. The Packers, they're coming off a bye week, I believe. I like them kind of in a big one here.
Well, especially because you gave analysis. Now I definitely feel like I have to go against you.
All right. Well, you know what? If you're going to do that... lock me up.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Locks up the Packers 7.5.
It's a lot of points.
I can't go against the Packers here because if there is something that's unfair, and I don't think it's worth bitching about because this is how it goes in the NFL. Okay? The schedule can't be fair every week for every team. The Packers are coming off a bye, though. So they've had 2 weeks to prepare. Well, it is a short week for the Giants. I don't think the flight is a factor at all. It's such a short flight. But, I'm going to go with Packers, too. Not going to lock it up, but Packers, probably. God damn it. We agree again 3 straight times. This is not going to end well. Okay, Falcons at Broncos. Broncos is a 6-point favorite in this game. So, I mean, these are some high spreads here. This is a 305 game Sunday on Fox. Atlanta's been looking okay. And the Broncos still undefeated. Another undefeated team here that we're picking in the 4th straight game. But Trevor Siemian got carded. What's his status? I haven't even been able to follow up on that.
I think it's, well, not as serious as it looked. I think he could have played last. He could have came back last week, right? Given the game situation.
So could Leonard Floyd.
Yes. So but
apparently.
Apparently. I like the Falcons and the points. Okay. Julio Jones is as last week showed.
Jesus, 300 yards.
Unstoppable. 12 catches, 300 yards. How many touchdowns? Two? Was it two?
I think he had three.
Three?
Maybe.
Matt Ryan putting up big numbers again. Look, they did that against the Panthers, right? The Panthers are kind of a mess. The Broncos have an outstanding defense, but the whole quarterback situation. Look, I like Trevor Siemian, but he's still Trevor Siemian. Now he's a hurt Trevor Siemian. So give me the Falcons and the points.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you again. I think you got to go Falcons here. It was only one touchdown for Julio Jones, but 300 yards on the dot on 12 catches. Whew. Now, the Broncos have good corners.
Yes.
So, but still, Julio Jones looks... It is a lot of points here. So, I think just kind of out of principle with the points, I am going to agree with you. For some reason, I'm going with the Falcons. All right. Moving on. Bengals at Cowboys. The Cowboys are 1.5... Excuse me, just a 1-point underdog at home to Cincinnati.
Yeah. Kind of an underachieving team, Cincinnati, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
But they played pretty good teams, right?
325 game on CBS.
Give me the Cowboys and the point. And Robbie Gould, if it happens.
If it happens. And Robbie Gould, even if he's not on the team. You're going Cowboys?
Yes.
All right, Cowboys, it is for you. Man, this is a tough one.
You got to hit the lock button, man.
I know, but I'm not going to do it on this game.
You're going to find another game?
I'm going to take the Bengals here.
Okay.
And I'm going to rewind back to... this is just fishy, though. The Eagles at the Lions. It seems so obvious that the Eagles will win by 3, mm-hmm. which is what has me worried. But I'm still going to go ahead and lock up the Eagles.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
I kind of cheated there waiting until we got through the games. Sorry. Yeah. I just forgot to do it. All right. So we differ once again just on one game.
This is how I make my comeback, but...
Yeah, that's what you said last week, though, and I won the one game.
I promised not to put too much analysis into this, and here I am talking about Odell Beckham's anger management problems.
Just like I said, I hope people just fast forwarded to this moment as we move on to college. All right, some really good games.
Well, not the first one.
Right. Really good games to get to. So we're going to do the opposite. We're going to start with a battle for 14th place in the Big Ten.
I didn't think there could be a team worse than Illinois.
Oh, there is.
Purdue?
Perdon't is really bad.
Did you say Perdon't?
Perdon't.
Perdon't?
Perdon't. Not Purdue, Perdon't.
Perdon't. Okay. And who's their coach again? Hazel?
Daryl Hazel. Hazel. Let's see. Actually, I meant to look this up before the...
He's been there for... He's got to be gone after this year, right?
Oh, he should have been gone last year. They need to hire Brock Spack.
Illinois State's
actually been struggling the last few weeks.
How about what's his name from Western Michigan? P.J. Fleck.
Yeah, but he could do better than Purdue, I think.
Yeah. Maybe Brock Spack could do better than Purdue.
Maybe. All right, give your analysis on this game. I want to find this. There's a quote from Daryl Hazel I tweeted out back at Big Ten Media Days. I got to find this. It was like the... All right. No, I found it already. All right, so I'll lead here. This was a quote from Daryl Hazel on July 25th. Quote, "We're in a great place right now."
Oh, I know that quote. Didn't Mark Trestman use that quote before?
It's the one I tweeted this out. I said, I tweeted out the quote and I go, I'll let Twitter make the Mark Trestman jokes.
Man.
I mean, he's standing up there in front of, you know, hundreds of media members. Everyone in that room knows his team sucks. And he's up there and what else can he say? But it's like when Mark Trestman was like basically having to lie his way through that season.
Yeah.
Just to sort of show a positive face when everything was going wrong. I mean, they should have moved on from Hazel last year. It's like, I have some sympathy for him. I have some sympathy for him in that this Purdue team. So, did you see what happened with their field too the other day?
Oh, it's like there's like a sinkhole.
A sinkhole developing on their field.
Oh.
Now, I have to go there in a few weeks with Northwestern. Should I be worried? I mean, I don't want to get up.
Maybe doing this podcast by myself. Adam will get sucked in by the field of Purdue.
Yeah, Dave, I'm reporting live from 6 feet underground as I've been sucked into the Ross-Ade Stadium here.
Oh, man. Oh, for the good old days of Drew Brees, huh?
This spread is amazing because Illinois is not very good, and yet the Fighting Illini at home are a 10.5-point favorite.
Yeah. Wes Lent goes off. He went off on him last year.
Illinois hung with Nebraska.
Yes.
Last week.
That was coming off a bye week, though, right? Still Purdue. Purdue is you. Where's that from? Are you just making it up now? Purdue.
Probably Herb Lawrence.
Yeah. So Purdue. Well, yeah, Illinois wins big.
Here's the thing. I'm trying to find Purdue's schedule, and only their basketball schedule comes up. What should happen when you Google them.
Yes.
That's absolutely what should happen here. Purdue has 2 wins over Eastern Kentucky and Nevada. They lost by 18 to Cincinnati at home.
And they got spanked by Maryland.
Spanked by Maryland last week, 50-7 on the road. Maryland's undefeated, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get weird here and say Purdue covers.
Okay.
That's a lot of points.
It's college, though, man.
After all that smack I just talked about Purdue.
Yeah. I'm going Lovey.
You going to lock it up?
Yeah, you can lock. I'll lock up some Lovey.
Lock up Lovey.
You lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
All right.
I'm locking that one up because I think these other games coming up are kind of...
Difficult to call?
Yeah.
Difficult to call. All right. Some really good games. None of them in the Big Ten. Number 9, Tennessee at number 8, Texas A&M. A&M, a 7-point favorite at home over a good Tennessee team that has been through some craziness the last few weeks.
Yeah,
huge comeback against Florida, Hail Mary against Georgia, 2:30 game on CBS. A&M's getting a lot of respect here with 7 points.
Well, this is game day game, right? Yeah, this is game day.
I just assumed they were going to Miami, but probably a good call considering the hurricane that's about to hit Miami
as we record this. Yeah, the hurricane's about to... Okay, bad joke. Anyway, bad joke. I like A&M because, look, 7 points to me in college is, I get it. The Tennessee plays catch up a lot and they play it well, but that's just not a recipe for success, right? Sustained success. Playing that type of football. Look, they've been outscored a ton, I believe, in the first quarter. Texas and A&M's an explosive team. Who's their quarterback again? Trevor Knight, right? They run the ball very, very well. He runs the ball very, very well. They're an explosive running team. I think they're, 5-0 for the third straight year under Kevin Sumlin.
Mm-hmm.
I like what they're doing.
Good win over Arkansas a couple weeks ago.
They both played quality competition. Don't get me wrong. But the whole, dramatic comebacks make for great stories. But in the long term, I think that catches up to you. And it's going to catch up to them this week.
I'm not sure Tennessee wins this game. But I find it hard to think that they're going to lose by more than a touchdown here. The way they've been playing, I think most of their problems, Tennessee, and the reason why they've had these cardiac type games is because of their own mistakes. I think the talent across that roster is still good. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I mean, I saw it in person last year when they just whooped Northwestern in the Outback Bowl, and most of that talent's all back. Myles Garrett didn't play last week. That probably had something to do with why they only beat South Carolina 24-13. UCLA took them to overtime week one. Granted, it's week one. It was a while ago. I think Tennessee...
UCLA's got that quarterback, though.
Yeah, but they also have a lot of problems on that team. I think Tennessee keeps it close. Don't know if they win, but I'm going to take the Volunteers here.
All right. I'm going Aggies.
Aggies. Maybe if it was a night game. It's not. It's 2:30, though. All right. This is a night game, though, in the SEC. Number 1, Alabama at number 16, Arkansas. 6 p.m. on ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Arkansas is getting 14 points.
14 points.
They're a good team.
They are. Remember, I think I locked Arkansas up against A&M when they were getting a bunch of points against A&M a couple weeks ago, and they ended up losing by 21.
Yeah.
But that game was closer than the score indicated. A&M really pulled away in the final minutes.
Yeah. See, that's the thing.
That can happen.
It's why I like A&M with the 7. But, look, Alabama's defense is so good again, right? Jonathan Allen, the defensive end, linebacker Tim Williams, so good. I get that Arkansas's got some players. Again, I think we talked last week about Austin Allen, right? Brandon Allen's brother at quarterback for the Razorbacks. But Alabama's Alabama, man. I mean, they're – until you see otherwise, mm-hmm. I mean, their defense is loaded with NFL prospects again. They could cover that 14 points.
They can.
They can.
But they're not going to.
No? You hitting some buttons?
On my drive back from Iowa City last week, I took a detour, and I went and checked out Prophetstown, Illinois, the home of
I saw that tweet. Okay.
Brett Bielema. Yeah. And I went to the only bar that I saw in their, you know, little Main Street area.
Oh, man. What was it like?
Very friendly, welcoming. Oh, it was like a small town bar.
Carpet?
You know, I had the bar that goes all the way around with TVs on both sides, kind of like Moretti's.
Yeah.
You know, and then...
Was there carpet, though?
No, no carpet.
No carpet?
No. It was just it was a nice... Oh, you shouldn't say nice. It was a classic small town bar.
Okay.
It had some Arkansas stuff hanging up in the corner for Brett. The owner told me that Brett's brother was in there right before I got there.
Okay.
I just missed him.
That would have been fun.
Yeah. So the scouting report from... What the hell was that bar's name? Corley's or something like that.
So you're going with this. Okay, go. Yeah. Go. Yeah. Get it out there.
Arkansas is going to cover.
Okay.
That's what I heard in Prophetstown, Illinois.
The prophets, they were prophetic.
Probably what they were. The prophets were prophetic.
Okay.
Very nice people there. Thanks for the hospitality. I really just wanted to watch the fourth quarter of the Wisconsin-Michigan game, which didn't end well for me. But it was still worth stopping and very nice people. So I'm going to go with the fighting people of Prophetstown, Illinois here.
Okay.
And support Arkansas. And I'm going to take it a step further.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Night game at home. Good team. I don't know if Arkansas wins, but I don't think they lose by two touchdowns.
Okay. Let me give you some stats about the Alabama defense real quick.
Okay.
For the last five games, 10 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
13 sacks. 24 tackles for loss. 5 forced fumbles. 3 picks. And they've allowed just one touchdown in the red zone.
How many games was that? Last two games?
5 games.
Oh, the whole game. Okay.
That's 3 years.
All right. So let me now give you some context to all those. Great stats. Very impressive. They played USC in week one. Western Kentucky in week two. I'm going to skip week three, tell you who that opponent was in a second. Kent State in week four. Kentucky in week five. All right. In those four games, they gave up a combined 22 points. Okay. They went to Ole Miss in week three. Nearly lost and gave up 43 points. 48-43. Okay, USC's not good in week one.
They're still USC.
Impressive win, 52-6. That was a neutral site game, I believe, in Texas. Nice stats. Crap teams. The one team they played put up 43 on them.
Okay.
Arkansas, I don't think is going to put a 43, but they're going to hang around here. They're going to play well at home. I don't see this being a blowout. Sorry, can't do it.
You don't see it getting away from them?
No.
All right. Well, so, give me the Tide. This will differ.
All right. And then our final game as we wrap things up here on the Intentional Ground, a little bit of a longer episode here as we brought you the doctor early on in the show. This is a fun one. Assuming it gets played, I think it will... because the Hurricane should be out of Miami by 7 o'clock on Saturday night, but I mean this thing's a monster and it could potentially cause some type of damage.
Well, they're boarding up everything. There's 2 million people evacuated from the Florida coast.
So, you know, our thoughts are with the people in Florida, this thing, and also Georgia and the Carolinas, because this thing's expected to go right up the coast.
Yeah,
they're expecting flooding. A scary situation, and it will be interesting to see how this impacts the college football weekend, because there are a lot of schools hosting games across the eastern southern seaboard that, you know, are kind of weighing and watching right now what's going to happen. I think Miami should be okay by Sunday, but I'm not a weatherman, and even weathermen can't really predict these crazy hurricanes. But speaking of the football hurricanes, they are scheduled to host number 23, Florida State. Miami is number 10 in the country at this point. 7 o'clock game on ABC. This is that featured primetime game that we see every week on ABC. The Canes are a 3-point favorite.
They should be. I don't think Florida State's good.
They've been struggling.
They got demolished by Louisville.
They got demolished by Louisville and lost at home to North Carolina.
I believe at that time, Florida State was like the number three team in the country.
And then, oh, yeah. They were top five to start the year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I get
a lot of talk right now about Jimbo Fisher potentially going to LSU, too.
Okay.
Because he used to coach there. That could be a distraction that's going on. Mm-hmm. Again, though, a little bit of context here. Let me give you Miami's schedule. It's been an impressive 4-0 start for them. Florida A&M, Florida Atlantic, at Appalachian State. That was actually an impressive 45-10 win over a scary team. But it's still Appalachian State. At Georgia Tech. Now, they've won all these games convincingly.
Yes.
And they've looked good. Brad Kaya, potential first-round draft pick. Maybe future Chicago Bear.
Yeah.
Watch him if you're looking for a quarterback to watch. This is a good game to watch on a Saturday night. But this is really a different animal for Miami coming back home against Florida State.
Their rival. And Florida State's, again, lost to Louisville and North Carolina.
Yeah. At home last week.
Who is a ranked team?
Right. 3 points, though, at home. That says it's about even. I'm going to take the Canes.
Yeah?
In honor of Jared Payton.
Okay.
Jared told me they are, next week, Miami's hosting North Carolina, uh-huh. and they're going to have a reunion for their national championship team.
Really?
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Absolutely. The Ken Dorsey?
So yeah.
Ken Dorsey's going to throw a party. Jeremy Shockey.
I have a Ken Dorsey jersey from, like, high school.
Yeah?
No why, but I do.
Ken Dorsey. Okay. 4-year starter there, I believe.
So maybe I'll wear my Ken Dorsey jersey Saturday night.
When's the last time Miami's won in this series, by the way? It's been like six years?
It's been a while.
I thought I had that.
I don't have that in front of me, but you would think it's been a while. By the way, college football's better with Miami playing well.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited to see them back in the top 10. I don't know if they're really a top 10 team, but it's. I love that hire Mark Richt to begin with. It's a perfect fit for them. Their defense is playing a lot better. We'll see how they do against Florida State, but I'm going to take the Canes here.
I'm looking for, yep, the Hurricanes have lost 6 in a row to their rivals here.
This series, college football needs this series to be competitive.
Yes, again. Yes. Well, Miami's had their issues, right? They always have their their issues. But I like when they use the U and the swagger is there and they can play nasty. Mm-hmm. It just seems to come in bursts for them, right? I mean, they were so good when they had Ken Dorsey and all those guys, Ed Reed and every other NFL prospect at running back, what, Frank Gore, Willis McGahee, Clinton Portis. Yeah, he was there. But I like the U here, too.
Okay. So going.
Not a big believer in the Seminoles.
Yeah, they just don't look right for some reason. I just wonder the coaching rumors. Possibly having an effect there. All right. Well, a little bit of a longer episode. Thank you for sticking around this week with us. Hopefully you got some knowledge there with the Kevin White situation as we brought in Dr. Neil Gadadjar. We thank him for joining us on the program today. So we differ on the Chicago Bears game.
And that's the big one. That's all that really matters for this podcast, right?
That's true. That's ultimately what matters. But you're going with the Colts. I'm going with the Bears there. We'll see what happens.
We the Chicago Bears. We will forever be the Chicago Bears.
We'll. Stay hard.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
That's right. That's what we do here on Intentional Grounding, and we will continue to do so. We will have the post-game episode from Lucas Oil Stadium on Sunday after the game. Bears and Colts in Indianapolis. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Again, follow the podcast on Twitter now at INT Grounding Pod, INT Grounding Pod. Follow along there. Read us at WGNRadio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. Find the podcast on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding. You want to tell the listeners where you're watching the Cubs game Saturday night in Indy? Or are you going to keep that to yourself?
We'll be at the Yard House. Come hang out.
I'm a little sad I won't be there. I will have Cubs post-game duties. Which, by the way, you can listen to on WGN Radio after all the Cubs games during the playoffs. Looking forward to doing that. But, yeah, I won't be
I'll be a few drinks deep.
Joining. I would love to be. You know how much I love the Yard House. All right. Talk to you guys Sunday after the game.